How are you? And welcome to Mental Health 360, also known as Keeping Life Real. And my name is Dr. Susan J. Biley Lindner. A lot of people have been saying, Dr. Susan, we can't find you. We looked under Dr. Lindner, and some people are finding me under Dr. Biley. So that's B-I-L-Y, Dr. Susan Biley, or Dr. Susan Lindner, L-I-N-D-N-E-R. So as you many of you know, and I appreciate the emails that I've been receiving, I am new to the radio, and I am actually new to this whole venue of social media and actually putting myself out there. The purpose of this show is and always will be the intention of promoting good mental health and answering your questions and concerns that come up, whether it's in everyday life or maybe something that could be long-term that's impacting you now in the present. So if you have some questions, first of all, you can reach us at 888-627-6008. Okay, so that's 888-627-6008. That's the call-in number. And we are going to be on, we used to be on actually on in the evenings at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we're trying this new time slot to see how this works in terms of viewership and calls and email responses and all of that good stuff. So the number to call in, it's going to be, we're going to try this slot for now, every other Wednesday starting today. And that number is 888-627-6008. You can also send me an email by just sending me an email at info@keepinglifereal.com. You can try the website, keepinglifereal.com. Yes, the name of the show is called Mental Health 360, but that's to promote what we're actually doing here, which is mental health. And Mental Health 360 actually encompasses not just your mental health, but it also takes into consideration what's happening with your life in other domains. So imagine actually like a piece of a pie, and it's cut into 8 different slices, right? So one slice is your mental health and how you're feeling psychologically. Then you have another piece, which is your education, and then another piece, which is your employment. Another piece, which is your family, relationships, your spirituality. So we try to embrace every different dimension. And if I can't answer your questions, then I can actually find support and resources to help you find what you're looking for. Okay. So we're here every other Wednesday, and the call-in number is 888-627-6008. And the website you can try is keepinglifereal.com, okay? Or you can email us at info@keepinglifereal.com. So I thought I would start today with actually reading the first maybe 8 or 9 paragraphs of my book that's coming out. So I wrote a book, and it's called Reset Your Soul. And I was going to have it come out actually in November, but I don't think we're going to be having, I don't think it's going to be actually released until probably Valentine's Day of 2022. So I thought I would read you from here the first chapter from the book. And then we'll get into actually what the chapter is about and what the issues are about and what it's relevant actually to anyone who comes into therapy or anyone who's investigating what may be going on with their mental health that's not working. So the chapter sort of just gets right into the juice of the matter, and then the rest of the book breaks down exactly what we have to look for when we are doing therapy in relationship to that case scenario that I write. Let me just read this over to you. Hold on a sec. Okay, good. So here's the first chapter. And this is from a patient. Of course, all names have been changed. And Everything is confidential. So first I start with a quote in the book, Reset Your Soul. The power of positive mental health. So chapter one is a quote by Lao Tzu. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with one single step. I love that phrase. I think it's very profound. And it's true, no matter what we do in life, it's one single step, right? We have to make one step to start moving forward. So here we go with chapter one. Jonathan writes, and I write for Jonathan, quote, I don't want all the silly distractions in my life that temporarily help me feel better just because my actual life is unhappy. Close the quote. This was a good start. Jonathan is married. His wife is an alcoholic. He is codependent and an enabler of her disease. He has lived most of his life denying and or minimizing his wife's addiction and the negative impact it has had on their marriage and family life. Jonathan spoke about his children and how, when they were younger, he would try to hide and protect them from knowing that their mother was an alcoholic. He would take them out when his wife drank too much at home. He would tell his children that mommy has a stomach virus when she came home inebriated and intoxicated. He would ask his mother to watch the kids overnight when going to a party so she could have a good time without me nagging her about her drinking too much. Jonathan's goal was to keep the peace, not deal with the reality of his situation. He had decided to take an inactive rather than proactive approach to life. He wanted to avoid making difficult decisions. He wanted to look away from his reality. He didn't want to rock the boat. As Jonathan shared, it was easier to live on autopilot rather than take the wheel at the helm of the ship. As his children became teenagers, Jonathan was no longer able to hide his wife's alcoholism. He was upset. He reported to feel shameful and guilty for having played a role which at times jeopardized the well-being of his children and compromised the quality of their life. Jonathan felt he had failed them, and by doing so, he had failed himself. We are all victims of her addiction, mood swings, and emotional unavailability. She remains unwavering in her denial that she doesn't have a problem while we all stand by and suffer. I suggested marriage counseling. On their first, which was their last, session together, my patient's wife was very clear that she had no desire and or no intention to stop drinking. This is a way of life for me. Everyone drinks in my family. I enjoy it, and I have no interest in changing. Her response was clear. My patient didn't have to like it, but there was no guesswork involved. Jonathan's wife was not interested in becoming clean and sober. She was not interested in getting better and or in understanding how alcoholism was negatively impacting her own health and or, and or her relationship with her family and friends. She was not interested in change. My patient was not a victim, but rather an enabler of his wife's addiction. He was part of the problem, having failed to take responsibility or accountability for the parts of his life that were not working. This session clarified how Jonathan and I would move forward and how I could best support him in finding answers to long-standing issues and concerns. I asked him in his next session, if you realized your wife had a drinking problem while you were dating her, and it bothered you then, why did you ask her to marry you? And his answer was a turning point in his therapy. I then make a quote that the past does not predict the future, but you must understand the past in order to improve it. Right? So I go on in the book, actually, before we go back to Jonathan. And once again, if anyone's listening, I need to provide the number. If you want to call in with a question, it's 888-627-6008. Okay, that's a call-in number if you're listening to our show every other Wednesday at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 2 o'clock Central Standard Time, and then, of course, 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And I know I forgot the mountain, but you can figure that out. So in the book, I write behavioral imprinting. What is behavioral imprinting? So I'll read this part to you. One aspect of the early learning experience that we all go through is that all of us, we imitate the behavior of our caretakers. This is called modeling. We model what we see. So when we're born and we're new to the world, we do not know what to do, right? So we're looking towards our caretakers and we're modeling and we're observing what they do, what they're modeling. We're observing their reactions, their behaviors, the tone of their voice. We're just observing everything and taking everything in. So our perceptions are shaped by what we have lived through. That's a fact. And then as adults, unless we have actually questioned the validity of what we learned when we were a child, both adaptive and maladaptive coping strategies and behaviors and way of being, unless we actually assess that, question it, and see if it really works for how we function in the world, we can unconsciously bring maladaptive behaviors, maladaptive ways of being. We can bring that into our life in the present, and that's where a lot of us get roadblocked. Okay, and that's really where a lot of people then are brought into therapy because something is not working in the present. And I have to tell you that most of the time, sometimes there's people that come in and they have a problem. It's present related. They resolve it and they're out. But most of the times when people come in, they're coming in with something that they think is bothering them now. And the truth is most of the problems are really usually longstanding and they just haven't been unaddressed. They haven't been uncovered. They've been swept under the carpet. As a matter of fact, I'll read to you here what happens with Jonathan when he speaks about having swept things under the carpet and that really not being effective for him. So let me read this to you. So we know that there is the imprinting where your caretakers did the best that they could. So I'm going to start there. It's not your fault, right? And that's what I try to really instill. When patients come in for therapy, I try to let them know it's not your fault. This is not about a blame game. We're not pointing fingers and saying, you know, my mother did this, my father did this. And blaming them. We can say this is what they did and this is what happened, but we're not going to blame them. Okay. Let me tell you why we don't blame the people around us. Because when a patient comes in to see me, I will encourage them to look at the history of, let's say, their caretaker's life. So let's say it's your mother and father. And many of times, if you look at what happened, how was your mother? How was her childhood? And how was her mother's childhood and father's childhood? And when you look back historically, you start to understand the snowball effect is that you really got the best of what your mother could offer based upon how she was developed, where she came from, and her grandparents also. Now, many of times that's not optimal for our mental health and wellness. Clearly, that's accurate. However, knowing and understanding what happened historically in the past to your mom, to your grandma, their influences, what they had to struggle through. It helps you as someone who's looking into your own mental health. It helps you to understand, at least have a reason, a solid reason of why you may have been hurt in your own childhood due to your mom or your dad's or whoever was caring for you due to their own emotional impoverishment. So if they didn't have it, how could they give it to you, right? So it's very important when someone comes into therapy that we look at the past and we understand where a patient is right now and what's the history behind them. So we can say, all right, we understand it, but we're not going to blame them. And it's very significant to take accountability and not blame and say, okay, I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. I could have maybe realized this sooner, but I didn't. But it's not their fault, and it's really not my fault. It's sort of like we're like victims of circumstance, right? So I'll read this part to you, and then I'll go on to Jonathan just to go back to that. So it's not your fault. If your care, I'm reiterating actually what I just said here. If your caretakers did their absolute best in raising you, but due to their own impoverished and dysfunctional childhoods, fell short in meeting your needs, you may feel cheated, upset, angry, or depressed. But the truth is, your parents and your caretakers did the very best. We have to go on that assumption that they tried. It wasn't their fault that they didn't know any better. How could they? They too came from a childhood where loss and tragedy perhaps was the rule rather than the exception. It wasn't their fault, the same as it isn't your fault. It is, however, your responsibility to heal and move on from the past, to take the bull by its horns and to change what can be changed, to identify parts of your life where you feel stuck and move forward from there. It's not so important what happened, but rather how to deal with it. And then in further chapters in the book, Reset Your Soul, I explain why it's important to understand how you got to this place without blaming others. So I write, the blame game stops here. So if anyone's listening right now and you can relate to this about what has happened to you with your own mom and dad or your own caretakers and how it's impacted you in the present, then give us a call. Call in 888-627-6008. That's the call-in number. Okay, 888-627-6008. Okay, so if you can relate to this, give us a call and we can answer some questions and hear what you have to say. So you are the master of your life, and you are the master. You create your masterpiece. You are the creator of your existence and the author of your life story. The legacy that you leave behind will speak volumes of how you turned loss into opportunity, of how you made the best of difficult situations, of how you elevated your soul's consciousness and awareness, leaving this place called Earth a better place because you were in it, right? And I'll just sidetrack a little bit and then I'll go over to Jonathan. But just actually yesterday or 2 days ago, I have a new client who is blending into an existing family, and her boyfriend, fiance, he has two children. And my patient was feeling very threatened and competitive with the ex. And this is like such a common situation. So because I am initially, I'm a child psychologist, and I always advocate for the child. I advocate for the child within the adult, and I advocate for the child that is being cared for by my patients. And my priority is always, what how are these children being impacted by what's going on with my patients? So when I'm dealing with my patient, I'm helping them, but I'm also thinking about their legacy of what they're going to leave behind to their children. You know, are they going to put all of these maladaptive coping strategies and maladaptive behaviors and not having tolerance for being frustrated and anger outbursts, are they going to put that on their children? And then their children grow up and then they come in 20 years later into therapy with the same exact problems that my patients are coming in with. Why? Because no one stopped the cycle. And this to me is why I do this show. Even if we have one listener once a month and somebody learns something from this, that's exactly what my goal is for doing this show. This is like a philanthropic effort for me to put forward education and resources and to help people understand why you want to look at your mental health issues. I have another patient, she went through her boyfriend's diary, and in like the front page, it was like he wrote from like probably, I don't know, two years ago, he wrote, "It's time to address my mental health issues," but he still hasn't. And the relationship is really teetering on whether it's viable and sustainable for long term. And we don't know yet. We just don't know. You know, I've provided a tremendous amount of resources and supports and referrals through my patient to provide to him. If he bites on it, he does. If he doesn't, he's not ready. What can you do? So lots of times people are not ready for therapy, but many of times they are ready, but they don't really want to know what they already know. As a matter of fact, I'll read to you something. I had a new patient that just started, and I'm not getting sidetracked. We will go back to Jonathan, so I'm not forgetting, just so you know. But I did have a new patient who came in, and after we spoke, I did like an intake session with her to see if she was a good candidate to come into therapy and if she was like really ready. And we had a long discussion. So after the discussion, she texted me, "Hi, Dr. Susan." She goes, "I'm sure that this feeling of me being a little anxious and nervous and scared, it's normal. But I just want to share this with you and tell you how I feel. And I want to ask you, is it normal?" So I wrote, "Hi." I said, "I'm glad you reached out. Of course it's normal. Internally, your subconscious knows that you are going to uncover what you already know is a problem." So let me just actually clarify that. There are three levels of consciousness, and I don't want to, next time, I should have my whiteboard. Next time I'll bring my whiteboard. So we have three different domains within psychoanalytic theory. We have three different domains of our consciousness. It's more of a Freudian analytic perspective, but I believe that this is a staple theory that's accepted among many different types of modalities for therapy. So you have your consciousness, things that you know, right? And then we have our subconscious, things that we know are there, but we do a good job either at repressing them or suppressing it because it's a little bit intrusive and we don't want to deal with it. And then we have our unconscious. This is where a tremendous amount of if we've had trauma, if we have difficult psychological situations, issues, traumas that have happened to us that our body and mind, because the mind is a body part, our mind knows that if the unconscious knows, let me clarify, the unconscious knows that if it discharges, lets out the trauma into the subconscious, moving forward into consciousness, and if we're not ready, then that would be psychologically damaging for us. So our unconscious is really our caretaker, and it really is the protector of our soul. And it only slowly lets out what it knows we can handle at the time that we can handle it. And it slowly comes through into the subconscious. And then we come into awareness of consciousness. And then people come into therapy and they're saying, you know, this is what's going on. And we go into it and they are at a place where then they can finally deal with it. So when I wrote to my patient here, who just said that she was feeling a little scared, a little anxious, and a little nervous, I said, of course, that's completely normal, completely. So I said to her, internally, you already know what the problem is and what the issues are. And you already know that the issues that we have to address and we have to discuss to figure out how to help these problems and these feelings, how to help them, one, feel more manageable, and two, be less intrusive in your life and in your functioning. And then three, how to help you move forward without bringing the past into the present or the future, right? That's the goal. The goal is not to project what has happened to you from your past and not to project it onto somebody else and or into any situation. And that could be in a relationship, that could be at work, that could be actually anywhere. But it is very important not to project. And actually, quite frankly, it is a defense strategy. It's a strategy that a lot of people do because they don't want to take accountability and look at themselves. So you'll have an argument with your significant other and they'll be like, oh yeah, but you know, when you did blah, 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 well, one, they're changing the subject. Okay. And they're taking then the onus off of themselves. And then two, they're not looking at what you're pointing out. Now, how you point things out, I get further into that in chapter 6 and 7, the communication style. And I'm not going to go over that today, but we will go over that in another podcast. But how you actually approach something is also very, has an impact on how somebody is going to respond. But if you have, if somebody says to you, if you say to somebody, you know, this really bothered me when you did this, okay, you're owning it. This bothered me, right? So you're owning it when this happened. And then somebody says, yeah, but look, you do this all the time, ABC. Remember when you did XYZ? Okay, that's not really then really helping anybody. And it's not what it's, what's going on there. It's a projection. And there's also a displacement of owning and being accountable for the moment. And you know, you don't want to miss those moments. You don't want to miss those moments. You want to be able to say, even if they feel ego dystonic, which is uncomfortable for your ego, even if they feel ego dystonic, you want to be able to sit with that and process it and see how you're going to be able to handle, right? How you're going to be able to handle, like, looking at a part of yourself that you don't want to look at, but that you know that's there. So that's why I write to my patient that internally your subconscious, it's the part that you know, but you don't want to know. Your subconscious knows that you are going to uncover, that it's going to come forward and present into your consciousness, what you already know is a problem. And she wrote, okay, thank you so much. So then we had our session and she just then later on wrote, that she was very grateful that she had found me and that she had found a way to finally address what's been going on for her for a very long time. So I was, it, she has a lot of, there's a lot of, what should I say, the prognosis for her in terms of really getting to where she needs to be is like really, really good. And I'm very happy for her. And I'll continue working with her for a while, until she's ready to exit therapy. And then I'm sorry, I got a text message. And then coming just for tune-up sessions. Okay, so let's go back to Jonathan. So Ram Dass, first of all, I put this quote in here. Ram Dass, he passed away recently over the past few years, so I have to update that. He was born in 1931, but I don't know when he died. He wrote that resistance to an unpleasant situation is the root of all suffering. So if you resist, like what you already know is there, and you don't want to look at it, and you want to sweep it under the carpet, you can do that. But then eventually it doesn't work. I just had a patient who came in and who said she swept everything under the carpet for 20 years and she just put it like as if, well, this is what's normal. But you know what? It wasn't normal. She was and is involved in a home where there's domestic violence. Okay. And what is domestic violence? It doesn't mean that you have to have physical black and blues, but there's verbal neglect, emotional neglect, verbal assault, emotional assault, abuse in terms of the words used, the language, the emotional games. So she's in a domestic violence situation, and her kids have become victims of it. And the only reason why she realizes that she's in this situation of domestic violence, which I defined for her, is because her children ended up going to therapy. And listen to this. Her children ended up going into therapy. The son essentially was suicidal because he was saying words like, well, I'm not going to be here much longer, right? Now, a lot of parents will, it's a red flag. Like, you know, hey, I got to get my kids some help. But this mom, who was so enmeshed and blinded by what she thought was the norm, wasn't really hearing that. I know it sounds astounding, but it's the truth. But yet we use compassion because we provide education. And then the mom came in for therapy and we start looking at what's really going on. And the mom is becoming like such a better mom and doing so many great things in terms of her parenting skills, being more emotionally available, being a buff, not a buffer. I'm setting a boundary. That's the word. Not a buffer, but setting a boundary between what is appropriate and what is not appropriate in the home, right? And the work continues. What can I say? This is the work is always continuous, but how do I want to phrase this to you? The work is always continuous because that is life. But having a boundary in between each moment of life clarifies actually how you move forward in life with more effective and safe and healthy strategies that embrace not only your own well-being, but then the well-being of your family, right? Okay. So let's go back to Jonathan, if you recall. I'm sorry about that diversion, but Jonathan, his wife's an alcoholic and the kids are getting older, right? And he can't hide it from the children any longer. And he wants to know, I asked him, if you knew that she was an alcoholic before you married her, why did you marry her? Right? That's a valid question. So I write here, Jonathan may or may not have been a child born into an alcoholic family, but something went awry in his own development that left him feeling empty with a need to be needed. Marrying an alcoholic fills that void. The chaos and roller coaster ride of having married someone with an addiction was daunting and overwhelming. Yet it provided Jonathan with the perfect and socially acceptable excuse not to look at himself, which is what happened. He was busy. He was the primary caretaker of their family. His calendar was full. How could he possibly find the time, or should I say, the courage, to look at his own unresolved internal needs? Jonathan walked into therapy stating, I should have been here 5 years ago, maybe even long before that. He was ready to find his truth. He was ready to look at what he had avoided and danced around for so many years. He was finally ready to find some answers. He was looking for real and effective change. The question is, are you? And then there, I have a little quote here, another good quote, which I really liked it. And it's by, I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, so I'll spell it. It's Huineng. This philosopher was born 638 AD after death, and he died 718 after death. And his quote is, look within, the secret is inside of you. Okay, so we have a caller on Gladys, and she's on line one. So we'll take her call, and anyone else who'd like to call in, it's 888-627-6008. And we're going to still get back to this, but let's take Gladys's call. Hey, Gladys, it's Dr. Susan.
Oh, hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call. Be quick. I choose my question is the following. Many of us are having issues dealing with, besides the pandemic, is to handle how to handle staff and the pressures of work, which in the end affect our health. Because we don't know how to deal with that, and we carry it home and stay with us if we don't find an outlet or something to deal with it. So what would you suggest that maybe can help us?
So let me rephrase your question. Are you asking in terms of how to handle, in a COVID environment, how to handle the work stressors versus the family balance? Is that what the question is?
Yeah. Yes, you got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. How are you handling it right now?
Well, I'm trying to make time to do more physical activities, like walking, exercising, and trying to... Yeah, pretty much physically, like that my mind stopped thinking about the work and how to deal with the work, and besides, on top of whatever is going on at home. But it's affecting work, so. But the exercise and the physical activities, the walking, it really has helped.
So are you telling me that the stress from COVID and the stress from your family is impacting your work and your productivity?
Yes. And I know I'm not the only one.
You do? How do you know that?
Well, I talked to some of my coworkers. I talked to workers in general for my work. And they really have a hard time with the pressures of work, especially with the mandates with the vaccine, wearing the mask, not wearing the mask, not having exact guidelines. Mm-hmm. And then I deal with dealing with the public. So, and on top of that, dealing with the public when they don't understand that you just an employee. You cannot make decisions of what's going on in the workplace.
So you're telling me that what you're experiencing is that not only yourself, but a lot of your coworkers are experiencing a lot of stress in a COVID environment. Yes?
Yes.
And the COVID on top of personal problems in your life is negatively impacting your productivity and your work ethic?
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Well, now I have to tell you, it's It's really been very hard. I mean, I included, I speak to a lot of my colleagues when I go into the hospitals, and everyone says the same thing, that life really doesn't feel the same since COVID, right? There have been so many different changes. There's so many, everything's just changed. Everything just feels different. And I do believe that all of us, you know, put on, you know, our best clothes and we go out into the world and we do the best we can within a COVID environment. And being in myself, New York and Florida, it's a high risk state. We're back in the red. Like, for example, I just found out yesterday that Queens County in New York is back in the red. And so that means our numbers are above 3%. So I think, you know, what you're saying is with physical activity, what you're saying is that that's your strategy for coping. And I think it's fantastic that you're being so proactive in getting out there and exercising and being with nature and just trying to clear your head. But then the question becomes, when you come back home, the problems are still there, right?
Yes.
And when you like go online or go out into work, your problems are still there also, right? So
correct.
What are you doing? Right. Do you find that the exercise and taking in this time that you take for yourself helps you put into perspective your family and work issues in a different way? Or do you find that helpful?
In a way, not all the time. And yeah, you put it, I guess, correctly, is as we're putting... I'm putting a Band-Aid on the issue and not dealing with it. And but once I clear my head, either by exercising or walking or trying to read, they actually, I come back by putting it aside and come back and try to deal with it once I've already at least thought about it, a solution or a way to deal with it. It did help, but...
You know, I have to tell you, Gladys, there is there's a model, and I have it in my book, and it's a theoretical model called the stages of change. And it deals with how people change and how they actually process change. And there are different phases. There's pre-contemplation, contemplation, there's an action phase. It's four stages, and I don't have them all memorized. So I didn't give it to you maybe in the right order. So I'll have to correct that. I'll check on it and then put that on my website. But what you want to do is when you come back from these walks and you're feeling actually a little bit calmer and you feel more that you have self-nurtured and have taken care of yourself, it might be a good time after you get home, you relax, you take a shower, and like you really like you have a little peace. Maybe a good way to start breaking down what it is that you do want to work on is to take a piece of paper. And what you want to do is you want to write down two types of paper, actually. One sheet for the pros and cons of what's bothering you at home. So you write down the problem that's bothering you. Okay, with your family, let's say. And so you itemize your problems, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it should be. And then you make a column for each of the numbers, 1, 2, 3, and 4. You make a column, the pros and the cons. What's the pros of continuing to sustain the relationship the way it is? What are the cons if you decide to make a change? So you make a list of the pros and cons. So it gives you oversight of what you are actually dealing with. What are the actual measurable problems? Okay. And then you create another sheet that actually has, and then you do that also, the same type of sheet, you do that for work. So you write down the issues, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then you have a column under 1, left and right, pros and cons, under 2, left and right, pros and cons. What is the pros of dealing with this the way it is? What's the cons if I decide to try to make changes to it? And this gives you, first of all, what this does for you is It allows you to breathe because it allows you to feel when you see it visually, it feels more manageable. Okay. So it doesn't feel so overwhelming and you don't feel so over, like all over the place. You feel like more or less you have control and you are aware and acknowledge the stressors of each different domain. One domain is the work and one domain is the family. And then you have your issues and then you have your pros and cons of either trying to address it or not address it. Now, once you have done that, then you breathe into that and you don't make any fast decisions. You process what you're seeing and then you give yourself on another list, the third sheet of paper, you would give yourself a list of interventions of things that would feel really good if you were to change things at home or things at work. And you write down a list of for work, you would write down a list of things that you would do to change the situation, right? And the same thing in the family. And then you write down interventions that are going to be, they can start with small, measurable changes that you can make to something that may be more radical, like leaving the job would be a radical step. And radical is not a negative word. It just means that it is, I guess it's the extreme end of change, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that it's a little bit more intense. So what you want to do then is you want to write down, okay, these are the problems and here are possible solutions of what I could do. And then you start working from that piece of paper in terms of figuring out what feels good, what's working and what doesn't. And then if you need, if it's not really helping a lot, then you can, come into therapy and share with your clinician what would work, if that makes sense, and how you need some support and to get some direction.
No, it does make a lot of sense. And yeah, that's what I was trying to get to. I guess what I take from what you just said is, if I untangle the mess that I have in my head and put it in different sections, and I can actually see it.
That's it.
What I'm dealing with. And yeah, because you're right. It's everything is in one big knot inside my head. And
okay.
Yeah.
So I don't want to cut you off, but we're ending the show.
And thank you.
I got to let you go, but I want to leave the show with the theme of entanglement. And in 2 weeks from today, we're going to pick up on entanglement. Feel free to call back, Gladys. I would love to talk to you about that. I want to thank you for your call. I want to thank the listeners, and I want to thank you for joining Mental Health 360 and Keeping Life Real with Dr. Susan Lindner. Thank you, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.